It's time for Sports Lit 101, and as you mentioned earlier, Bruce, a brand new anthology.
Yeah, this just arrived in the mail. Prairie Schooner is a literary magazine that is one of the most revered in the United States. And I don't want people to be scared off this book when I say literary magazine, because Prairie Schooner does publish fabulous poetry, fiction, nonfiction. But this is a group of poems, stories, and articles, essays, assembled by Natalie Diaz. Now, I did not know who Natalie Diaz was. I don't want to come off like some smart guy that knows everything. She played Division I basketball at Old Dominion, and she's a mixed Mexican-American and Navajo, and lived on a reservation, grew up there. This was her ticket out of, and she now teaches at Arizona State University. She's a professor. She did not become a poet or a writer professor until after she had left playing college basketball. These are the essays and the poems and the stories that I think people need to read when they begin to decide what it means to be a fan. What does it mean to look at all the, you know, the NFL and the NBA are 75% non-white. The WNBA is 66 or 67% non-white. I don't know how you figure it out in baseball, because I don't know how Latinos get counted as white, sometimes not, whatever. I don't really care. But the point is that a tremendous number of the people who provide the entertainment in sports are persons of color, and virtually none of the people that own these teams are. And many, 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 many of the fans of the National Football League look more like me than they do like Colin Kaepernick. And so when she examines sport, or she doesn't, she has gotten all these wonderful articles and stories and poems that examine what it's like for the athlete in the sense of, this is my body. This is what I gave. This is my body. This is what I built. I had the quickness. I had the special traits, but I had to do all these other things. And this is the price my body has paid. Now, I was thinking about the great book Rebounders we read by Amanda Ordway, which really looked at Division I women's college basketball in a different kind of light. Diaz herself wrote the introduction to this, which is about, I don't know, maybe 40 pages long. Not that long, but it's really lengthy. This book is worth the introduction alone. It's her thoughts explaining why she's pulling all these articles together. Now, for instance, Terrence Hayes, who was one of America's most recently well-lauded poets, someone I've had the chance to get to know a little bit. I don't know Terrence well, but I sure am a fan of his, has a hybrid piece in here that sort of is between poetry and prose poetry, and it's about growing up and wanting to be a basketball player and what a 6-foot-tall, 13-year-old African-American boy is expected to be. And he grows up to be a guy who's going to win the Pulitzer Prize in poetry someday. So what this book really challenged, and I have not read all of these articles. I just got into this the other night, and I just couldn't stop reading them, is where do we as fans exploit the athletes we watch, and where do we not? You know, where is it that we criticize Allen Iverson for his rant about practice, when the point is Allen Iverson probably didn't need to go to practice, right? But we think we have some standard, and we'd always go to practice, and we'd be there every day. Yeah. You know, I mean, how many times have you heard some coach, I never took a wind sprint off in my life? Oh, baloney. You know, I would always tell my students, look, you got to try and do the best you can every day. Run every one of these sprints as hard as you can. Some days you're not going to be able to do it. I couldn't always do it. I'm not going to tell you I always did it. I'm not going to lie to tell you I knew anybody who did them all. Every gasser, every suicide, as hard as they could. When we look at athletes, we commodify them. We think, in a sense, they need to perform for us.
Us, yes.
Right? And as you've pointed out so many times, and I find myself slipping this every once in a while, a fan of a team, we need to get a new center. We need to get another center. No, we don't. The Montreal Canadiens and the New York Rangers may need to get a new center. The Celtics may need to get a new point guard. I don't, you know, whatever. But we internalize these sports teams in a way that they become an extension of us. We don't realize that, and there's some great quotes in here from Jason Tatum about, Jaylen Brown, rather, about sports and the relationship stuff. But we'll be talking about some of these individual essays and poems and stories over the next couple of weeks. And it covers so many of the sports. And some of them are written by people who were very good athletes, played at a high level. Some are written solely by fans who wonder what it'd be like to be that person. But what I really like is this really, I'm so sick and tired of this big broad brush white privilege. Do I know it exists? Yes. Does white male privilege exist? Have I benefited from it? Yes. But looking at specifically the way that fans react with teams in this never post-racial America.
Right.
And, you know, she talks about Pat Summitt's husband yelling, you know, go back to Mozambique or go back to Africa to one of her teammates, and how it was sort of laughed off and played off and, well, in the heat of the moment and this kind of stuff. And she's saying, you know, I grew up as someone identified as Native who heard this kind of stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, we go, this mistakes were made. It was the heat of the moment. People this, people that, because we don't value them as human beings, we value them as whether they can score for our team.
Well, look no further than what happened down in Lewiston with their soccer team, the wonderful book that Amy Bass wrote that we've talked about.
One goal, yeah.
Yeah, but the people who could not see them, barely could see them as soccer players,
right?
Let alone human beings, and saw this as somehow a great affront to athletic equality that you would have, as if they moved to Lewiston solely to play soccer,
right? Or as the two Tays that were such fabulous runners, who left and went to Cushing Academy, not just because they were great athletes, but because they knew that in that private school environment, They weren't going to have sand thrown in their face at a cross-country meet. They weren't going to hear the N-word thrown at them. Because I promise you this, if that happens at a private school, the kid that did that is in deeper trouble than they can possibly imagine. They're back home looking for a new place to go to school. So this is not a diatribe. These are stories that explore situations and ideas that I think need to be explored, and explore all the stuff that Ed Rice and you and I have talked about with sort of, you know, branding people as Native. Do you know that Native Americans are killed by police officers at a rate twice that of black men?
I did not know that.
I did not know that till now either, that 1 in 3 Native American women will be assaulted in her lifetime, that there are something like 2,000 unsolved disappearances of Native women in the U.S. and Canada that no one is following up on. So When this is this woman's ticket out, when basketball and Old Dominion and the chin, now she's a college professor, this is one of those true stories that isn't the kind of story we would have seen in the 1950s movie where it was some nice white guy helped her out and made everything wonderful, right? These are true stories. I'm fascinated by this book so far, and I really, really, really want to look. I'm looking forward to finishing all the different articles and stories.
And I look, you know, we're close to home at the University of Maine, where you don't have to walk around the campus too long to see that the University of Maine looks very different than most cities and towns in Maine do. And a lot of that's because of athletes who are here. But the perception is often that they are here to get a ticket somewhere else. But the vast majority of athletes at the University of Maine will play a sport for the last time as a student here. And they're here, yes, to play sport, but they're here to get an education and to get a leg up on the next phase of their life and their career. And for most of them, it's not going to involve playing sports.
Yeah, and the other great thing is people always think it's the athletes who benefit from this alone, but it's not. I mean, as a teacher, I see it. I'll have athletes in class and non-athletes in class, and I watch them make connections and begin to understand each other and begin to understand the differences of where they came from. That's what education should be doing for all of us. And that's why I particularly, this is so important for college athletics. Pros, I'm so about ready to give up on all pro sports. I just, the corruption, but the way that intercollegiate athletics are the way for many people to see other people that never see. You know, 70% of the people who are at the University of Maine, the first time they were on that campus was to see a sporting event. Who have been at the University of Maine, 70% first time was to be at a sporting event. So if you have good sporting events and you have something people care about and the like, it builds your community, it builds your desire, it makes kids want to go to Maine. You know, it's so anyway, I'm really excited about this. I'm really glad. This just came out of the blue. Nice. I don't even remember that I had
ordered. And the title of it again
the title is Bodies Built for Game, the Prairie Schooner Anthology of Contemporary Sports Writing from the University of Nebraska Press. And I'll be trying to get Natalie Diaz to be able to join us.
Excellent. Excellent. Bruce with Sports Late 101 every Wednesday here in the program. As you were talking about pro athletes too, and I think I got in this discussion with somebody on the road over the weekend talking about professional sports. And I always go back to this. We forget it's their job.
Yeah.
It's their job. And like all of us, you have good days on the job. You have bad days on the job. And there are days when you want that job to be over for the day. And it's the same for athletes who I'm going to say probably have a more challenging and grinding work schedule than many of us do. I mean, I look at Major League Baseball players going 162. Well, we say 162 games a year, but there's another 35, 40 spring training games as well. And then postseason, if you get in, and that's a grind. And there are going to be nights when you mentally and maybe physically take a night off.
Yeah, people who have never traveled for their job make me crazy sometimes. When I was on the road playing music and people say, you're only gone for 3 weeks. I go, yeah, and I'm exhausted because I'm up late at night. I got to get on the road. I got to drive. I'm trying to give my best performance every night. You don't give your best performance every night. I mean, no. You try to always be professional, do the best you can, but there are nights you're tired. There are nights the audience isn't getting it. There are nights that you're coming down with something. There are nights you haven't seen your wife and kids in weeks and that's in the back of your mind. It's the same thing for pro athletes, except they do it for 9 and 10 months at
right.
a time.
And if you're a pro athlete, first of all, your loyalty, like it is for any of us in our job, is to your family.
Yep.
First, your coworkers, sure. And maybe the name on the uniform, the city on the uniform, plays into it somewhere down the line. But to expect these people to have this sort of built-in loyalty
right.
to the town that's on their uniform is one of the sillier things in all of sport, and especially when it comes to things like free agency.
Yeah.
How could you leave? How could you? Because I wouldn't do that. Boy, if I was playing for the Boston Red Sox, I'd give them a home team discount. I'd stay forever.
Remember when the people in Cleveland were burning all of LeBron's jerseys?
Yes.
They were all white guys.
Right.
I mean, notice that. These are all out of shape, white guys in their gear, burning LeBron's shirt. He had just given you your only NBA championship, and now you're turning on him because he got a better deal?
Because the reality is that most people have no idea what that's like, but imagine everybody who played sports as a kid at some point fantasized about what it would be like to play that sport professionally, but have very little understanding of what goes into that. And what you see on TV, those 3 hours when they're on the field, that's the good part.
Yeah.
Like traveling musician. When you're on stage,
it's great.
That's fantastic. But when you're on the bus, when you're in the hotel room,
Yeah, I mean, I can remember once being in the motorhome with Jack Elliott in Vermont, and we saw this rest area. And I looked at him, and I was driving at the time. I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I said, Jack, I don't want to drive to Burlington right now. He said, either do I. Let's just pull over there. And we had to find a level spot, 34-foot motorhome. We found a level spot. We went to sleep. Not more than half an hour later, in comes this big diesel, big semi. It goes to sleep, and another truck goes to sleep. And I said to him, all over America, there are truck drivers pulling off to go to sleep to go on a long haul the next day. There are musicians doing this, and everybody thinks the truck driving is country songs, and everybody thinks they're playing music. It's nothing but fame and fortune, It's not.
No, it's a job. And everybody's job has got its challenges. Everybody's job hopefully has some rewards along the way, but it's still a job at the end of the day. Even if it pays a lot more than you and I get,
that's right.
There's also another price that comes with that, too. So.